I was a very serious-minded child. My mother used to have to take me out of church even when I was 10, 11, and 12 years of age. Because for some reason, I did not know why, I began to cry uncontrollably in the services. I thought thoughts that were far deeper, and I don't mean more profound, I mean more serious than most children did. When I was a boy just about 12, we lived in poverty, but I was always a sports fan, still am. I don't go to any games, but I follow them. I'm a sports fan. And I was reading the sport page. We couldn't afford the paper. Somebody, I think my aunt or somebody sent it to us. We got it secondhand there too later. But I picked up a paper and was reading the sport page, and it was in the fall of in the fall. I forget what year it was exactly, but anyway, the sport page had in it an announcement of a contest, a nationwide contest. The January 1st Cotton Bowl game that year was to be between the University of Fordham in New York City and Texas A&M. Back in the days when Texas A&M had the famous fullback named Jarin John Kimbrough. Joe Boyd was the tackle, by the way, on that team. In the days that they had two-way tackles, they didn't have a defensive-offensive line. Joe Boyd was defensive tackle and offensive tackle. They played both in those days. Jarin John Kimbrough was about the strongest man I ever saw. He was about 235 pounds, about 6'4", and I mean every bit of it was muscle. He played fullback. In those days, they didn't have a T formation. They snapped the ball back, center snap it back like they do on a punt now. And the fullback would dig it, or the left halfback would take it. He was running back, fullback, and used a single wing formation usually, and had a tailback, they called him back here, and not beside him, a little in front of him, would be the fullback. Joe Boyd said that John Kimbrough was such a powerful runner that when Joe would line up at tackle, and Joe was All-American too, he would look across the line at the defensive tackle, and he would tell him, "Now, fella, I'm going to tell you what the play is. On the count of four, they're going to snap the ball to John Kimbrough. And I'm going to tell you where he's going to come. He's coming right through where we are. And I don't know what you're going to do, but I'm getting out of the way before he gets here." And I still can remember this. Some of the star players of the teams, Fordham had a running back named Lynn Eschmont, another running back named Jim Blumenstock. They had a center who was a captain of the team named Lou DeFilippo. In the Dallas paper, they had an announcement that they're going to have a contest, nationwide contest, for any boy, certain ages, any boy in the entire nation, coast to coast, border to border, to write an essay. Now, they called it an essay. It had to be an imaginary interview with the captain of the Fordham team, Lou DeFilippo. And you sent your essay to New York City, because that's where the press was, and that's where the Fordham was located. And so we didn't have any paper, so I got an old newspaper. And you know, the white place in the ads, the advertisements, I wrote on newspaper an imaginary interview with the captain of the Fordham football team and borrowed some money and bought us 3-cent stamp and sent it to New York City. I'm a little poor kid down in Texas. The whole nation qualified or able to enter. And so I forgot about it. Late one night, neighbor across the street came over and knocked on our little house, apartment house door, and said, "Jackie boy, Hiles, there's a long-distance call from New York City." Well, it may as well have been from the New Jerusalem, because to me, New York City was, I mean, that wasn't even the world. And I went over and picked up the telephone, and I said, "Hello," and they said, "Jackie boy, Hiles, my name is Grantland Rice." Now, Grantland Rice is the most famous sports writer who ever lived. He's the one who said, "It matters not whether you win or lose, but how you play the game." Most famous sports writer ever lived. He said, "I am the head of the judges to choose the outstanding interview of any boy in the nation, an imaginary interview." And he said, "I'm happy to tell you that your essay won the championship." And he said, "Your prize is to be the mascot of the Fordham football team all the time there in Dallas for the New Year's Cotton Bowl game." Well, that means that I got to lead the parade. I was up in front of the fire truck that led the parade. When they got to town, I met them at the train station. I was on the Mutual Broadcasting Company. There was no television back in those days, but I was on the Mutual Broadcasting Company interviewing Lou DeFilippo. And I can still remember the last thing I said. They told me what to say. And I said, "Lou, what's the greatest thrill you ever had?" And he said, "Oh, Jackie boy," he said, "playing in the Cotton Bowl game this year. Tell me, Jackie boy, what's the greatest thrill you ever had?" And my answer was, "Oh, gee, Lou, just sitting here interviewing you." I can still recall that. And the Dallas Athletic Club is a very elite place where the wealthy, it's the headquarters of the social life, at least was then, of the sports scene. And so all the banquets were at the Dallas Athletic Club. And I was at all of them, and sat right beside Grantland Rice, just a little kid, that tall, and sat right beside him. Now, they used me as publicity because they wanted people to think, "This poor little boy, he's somebody." And I was the mascot of the team, sat on the bench during the game, and was the mascot of the team. For about 2 weeks, I made the rounds. I still have somewhere. By the way, the Knox Gelatin Company was sponsoring the game on nationwide radio. Bill Stern, probably the most famous football announcer ever lived, broadcast that game, and I sat beside Bill Stern, and he's the one that introduced me on Mutual Broadcasting Company. So, but anyway, I saw, as a little boy, I saw the way people lived in the world. I'd never seen anything like that before. I can still remember my daddy used to drink eggnog, especially on Christmas. Now, Daddy's eggnog had a kick to it. And, it packed a wallop. It was old-fashioned. We used to call it roasting air punch. Roasting air is a word for corn. And it was corn punch, like the preacher down south, the pastor of the black church. He got fired from his church first Sunday as pastor there. But I asked him why. He said because he went out to eat in the home of the deacon chairman, and somebody asked him if he wanted some corn. He passed his glass. And talking about corn. But anyway, eggnog was a bad word. To this day, I won't go down to the store and buy some eggnog. I won't. No way. No, I won't touch it. No way. Because I think my dad may have had something to do with that. And I've never had eggnog in my mouth. Won't buy it. No way in the world. Now, I can recall, it's Christmas time, and they were serving eggnog down at the Athletic Club. Now, listen carefully. Bill Stern, the most famous. Have you ever heard Bill Stern announce a football game? Okay, you know who he is, you old timers. And Grantland Rice, Bill Stern, and the coach of Fordham, one of the four horsemen of the Notre Dame backfield, Crowley was his name. I forget his first name. That's his first name. Anyway, Crowley, one of the four horsemen of Notre Dame years before. And he was there, and I've forgotten the name of the coach at Texas A&M. But I ought to know, but I've forgotten. And they said, Jackie boy, how much eggnog do you want? And I was a little boy. I said, I want any. And they said, why? And I said, because I don't believe in drinking eggnog. And they said, what? And I said, I don't believe in it. And they said, okay, if you don't believe it, why don't you believe it? Don't believe it. I believe it. I said, because it's wrong to drink it. That's back in the days before I was embarrassed to stand for right, you know. And I had no difference. I thought it was supposed to do. But I never forget this, and I don't want any sympathy. It's been years ago, but I'll never forget it. For 2 weeks, they wined and dined me. Well, they coked and dined me. Dr. Peppered and dined me. They tried to wine and dine me. And I lived for 2 weeks every day on the inner circle of what the world calls top-notch living. They put me on the bench beside the coach. And I sat there on the bench and watched the game. Now, wait a minute. When that game ended, everybody left. Crowd left. Players left. Coach left. Grantland Rice left. Bill Stern left. All of them left. And there was a little boy sitting on the bench by himself. And I sat there till that whole crowd, 75,507 people, emptied the cotton bowl, wondering what's next. The fairgrounds in Dallas was across town from where I live. We had to ride a bus and streetcar. Nobody thought to take me there. They came to get me there. But they didn't give me car fare to go home. I had to go up and knock on a door and ask a lady if I could borrow car fare. It took 3 cents to go home. And a pair back. I did. She gave it to me. I did pair back later. But I sat there on the bench after about gone. And as a little boy, these thoughts were through my mind. There's something awful strange about this. And if my sister remembers, and I know Mother would if she still could remember back then, I got home and I cried for a day. Absolutely. I just uncontrollably cried for 2 weeks. They left me. That's always what the world does. It's always what they do. They end you, leave you on the bench by yourself. I remember sitting there on that bench as the cotton bowl emptied that day, and I wondered, who's going to come take me home? And I got to thinking, I don't think this is the way I'd like to spend my life. I just don't believe this thing I've been through is really real. And thoughts went through my mind deeper than most kids would have. And that was not unusual for me. And I got to thinking about life and time and how much I had. Our text tonight says, redeeming the time. I'll come back to this later. For the days are evil. The word redeeming here, it's important. Redeeming is a business term. It means the ability to buy. It implies knowing what to buy, how to buy, when to buy, and where to buy. It's an investment word. You got some money, and you want to know how to spend it, and the redeeming the time here is a word that includes business ability. Knowing when to buy, knowing what to buy, knowing where to buy, knowing how to buy. It means a business expert, financial wizard, if you please. That's what the word redeeming means. The word time is very interesting. It's a word that was used for special occasions. A special time.
a special time of buying, if you please. The word evil means hard times, time of calamity. Now put them all together. Redeeming, that's wise business investment. Knowing when to buy, what to buy, where to buy, how to buy, being a financial expert, investing wisely in a business proposition. And add that to the word time, which means a special time, which means a special time to buy, or the best time to buy, and add that to the word evil, which means time, hard times or time of calamity, and add them all together, you come up with this meaning. There is a sale on. There are many good buys during this sale because of hard times. You see, when the supply overtakes the demand, prices go down. You got two apples and one guy, or four apples, and two guys each want to buy an apple, the price goes down. You got one apple and two guys want to buy an apple, the price goes up. When the demand exceeds the supply, prices rise. For example, you have a frost or a freeze in South Texas or Florida, and you have a freeze of the orange trees, and the price of oranges will go sky high. You have a drought, and animals don't have enough to eat, and the price of beef, they die, and the price of beef goes sky high. So what this means is this. This means that there is a time when you can get a good buy at a good sale because there are so many good bargains, and it means as you take what time you have and spend, it likens time to money. And you have so much time to spend. Now, in times of evil, there are so many good buys for you. You see, there are so many things you can do with your time where you can get more out of it in times of evil. The apostle said, where sin did abound, grace doth much more abound. So in times of drunkenness, you got more broken hearts, broken lives, broken homes, broken dreams, shattered hopes. And so more people need help, not only in times of drunkenness, but in places of drunkenness. You know, Hammond, Indiana is a better place to serve God than where I live in Garland, Texas. You know why? Because Garland, Texas is dry. So where sin abounds, grace does much more abound. And the more liquor you got in an area, the more broken hearts, and the more they need the gospel, and the more they need God and His Word. And so it's a time of a sale. I mean a Kmart Blue Plate special sale, God is saying, in a time when it's sinful and extra wicked and hard times, a time of calamity, there's a sale on, and many goodbyes because of hard time. Now, time is your money. Be careful how you spend it because you don't have an overabundance of it. You see, we only have so much time. Now, God said, be careful how you spend your time because there's so many bargains. He said, don't go out and spend your time unwisely. He said, check it carefully and find what this bargain is and what this price is and what this one is and check it carefully because you don't have a lot of time. And so be careful how you spend your time. He says, have wise financial business sense as you take your time and purchase with your time what you need to purchase. Now then, here's what it means. It means be careful how you buy. There's some good bargains. Don't waste your money, that is your time, because time is the money with which you buy these things we're talking about. So what does it mean? It means shop wisely in times of depression, using your time. It means take your time and use it for money and go shop and be careful and shop wisely and use your time wisely in times of depression because there are more tremendous opportunities to do good in times of depression. It means be extra careful how you spend your time in times of of deep sin in times like this, where the homosexuals run wild, like as if it was acceptable to commit the wickedest sin, I guess, known to mankind. And brother, you say what you want to say, but the last thing that a nation does before God gives up on that nation is homosexuality and lesbianism. And the last sin that a man or a woman will commit when they've gotten so filthy and rotten that nobody has any use for, God Almighty gives up. The last sin they commit is when they commit lesbianism, homosexuality, the most filthy, vile, vulgar, satanic, heathen, pagan thing in the whole world. And by the way, I'll say this too. The wickedest people in the world are the homosexual crowd. I mean, boy, if you ever get in a fight with them, you get ready for a dirty fight because they know no bounds or rules in their fighting. Now listen to me. God is saying here, in this age where the homosexuals run wild, they've got a name for it than that, but they run wild, and where liquor flows like a river, and where looseness of morals is almost accepted thing in the wicked age of situation ethics, in the wicked age of looseness of morals and playboy philosophy, and they talk about a relationship almost like it was they were all okay, and you have this relationship, and then this one, and then this one, and God says in that time there are a heap of bargains. If a time a person breaks the law of God, there's going to come tears. There'll come tears and a broken heart. And another opportunity for you and I to spend our time wisely. What a place to live. Boy, what a place to live. Somebody said, boy, I'd like to live in a better climate. Well, you're not talking what God's talking about. I'm talking about a place where you can take your time and invest it wisely. What a place to live. I'd just as soon live in this area as any area in the whole world. Why? Because I've got one life to live. I've got so much time to spend, and I want to be sure I get my money's worth. And bless God, there's no place in the world where you can get your money's worth from your spending of your time like you can in this great area right here.
It means shop wisely in times of depression. Shop wisely with your time in times of deep sin. Shop wisely with your time. Your funds are limited. Be a wise shopper. Be careful. Don't spend your time wisely or unwisely. Now let me just reason with you for a minute. Hear this. Suppose I have 70 years. Suppose God gives me 70. I hope He'll give me some bonus. Not sure He will. That means I've already spent 21,105 days. All I have left to spend is 4,445 days. That's what I've got left in the pocketbook of time. That means 80% of soul is gone. Now, brother, I understand people who don't want to take what little time we have and invest it properly. If I have 70, I have left 732 weeks. I've already spent 3,007 weeks. If I live to be 70, I have left 146 months. I've already spent 694 months. My mama used to send me to the State Fair. State Fair of Texas was always at Fair Park, same place the Cotton Bowl is. And the biggest thing, they'd have Children's Day in the fall at the State Fair. And my mama and I would go down beside the railroad track. We didn't have any money. We'd go down beside the railroad tracks. She'd walk on one side. I'd walk on the other trying to find Coke bottles. You could sell Coke bottles for 2 cents apiece back in those days. And we'd work till we found 50 Coke bottles, go down to the grocery store at Libby's grocery store, and sell those 50 Coke bottles for 2 cents apiece and get a dollar. And Mama would say, son, you can go to the State Fair today, but you can spend just the $1. Now, can you recall taking that $1, holding that $1 in my hand? Boy, I thought that'd last a long time. But I got the State Fair. Now, watch me carefully. I got the State Fair, and I got to let this ride cost a nickel. That means I can take 20 rides like that. It's all gone. Now, cotton candy will cost me a nickel.
I can recall as a kid sitting down there with my friend, and we'd have a dollar piece, and all day at the fair, and we'd say, "We got to be careful. Do we want to ride this ride or this ride? Can't ride both of them. Now we got to pick out the one we think is the best for the money." Now, would it be cotton candy, or would it be what do they call it? An ice cream? Not sherbet. Anyhow. Kind of, they push on a, it comes out of a machine. No, not snow cone. Push-ups? Now, you're too young to know anything. Custard. Frozen custard. Right. And other guys in our group were, used awful bad language. They were, anyhow. So, I remember, I look at the custard, I look at the cotton candy, and I looked at the snow cone. I said, "Now look, I can't have but one. I got a nickel here to spend on one of the three. What'll I have?" And, man, I take 30 minutes sometimes trying to decide whether I want snow cone, cotton candy, frozen custard, or maybe apple, covered caramel apple. And never saw you listen so well. Now, that's what God's saying here. God is saying you have so many days. That's all. Now you say, time is the medium of exchange. Now, if you want to, you can take your time and buy some fun at the amusement park. If you want to, you can take your time and spend it in immorality. If you want to, you can take your time and spend it watching the filthy primetime television shows. If you want to, you can take your time and invest it in a tavern. But God said, it's your time, but he said, be careful. He said, use wise business sense as you take the time you have left and be careful you invest it properly. And I'll be honest, I don't understand some of you, for I don't understand it. I can't comprehend it. Good night. We only have so much time left. It just looks like to me most of the people in this room are making very poor investments of your time. And God said, take your time, and as you spend it wisely. That's what he means when he says redeeming the time. He said, I got a big sale on these days. People's hearts are broken. Their lives are wrecked and ruined. Orphans all over the place. Illegitimate children everywhere. Hungry folks everywhere. Broken hearts everywhere. Rest homes everywhere. He said, take your time and invest it wisely, because I got a lot of bargains on the sale these days. Let me reason with you a minute further. If I live to be 70 and pastor this church all that time, I've got 1,899 sermons left at 3 a week. I have preached behind this pulpit at 3 a week 3,873 sermons. Doesn't sound right, does it? That's what it is. Now that means this. That means if I only have a half as many sermons left as I've already spent, I don't have as much to spend as I had 25 years ago. And that means I haven't got one to waste. I mean, I've got only 1,899. And by the way, I may just have this one. I don't know how much time I have left, but I know this. I know whatever it is, it's mine to choose what I want to do with it. And God said, take your time and use it wisely. Invest it wisely. And I've got a lot of sales on. Be careful how you use it. And there's so many bargains. I just feel like there's so many good bargains for the expenditure of my time. I just don't think I want to spend any of it drinking liquor. Boy, you're a fool. You got one life to live. You got some time! Listen, time's the most precious thing you have. You say, well, no money is. No, your money is only worth how much time you spent making it. That means if a fellow makes $10 a day, another fellow makes $1,000 a day. If a fellow puts $10 in the offering plate, who makes $10 a day, and somebody else puts $1,000 in the offering plate, who makes $1,000 a day, that means they gave the same thing. Because they gave the same amount of time. Now listen, ladies and gentlemen, that little heart inside your breast is beating tonight, and that blood is flowing through your veins tonight, but it's only a temporary machine. It's just going to last so long. And God said, the most valuable medium of exchange you have is your time. Now he said, you can take that time and spend it on anything you want to, but he said, as the world gets more evil and an area and an era gets more wicked and more vile and more filthy, God said, there are more tremendous things on which you can spend your time. He said, that's when the sale's on. He said, be careful that you choose wisely where you invest your time. I don't know what you're going to do, but I haven't got enough time to spend it listening to a bunch of jerky music. Now I don't understand you kids. I just don't understand you. Yeah, I don't understand you adults. I don't understand you either. You adults are so out of it. No, you're so out of it. And I don't understand it. I just don't understand it. I mean, with one life to live, I don't understand wasting a bunch of it, sitting and watching this Michael Jackson heathen gyrate. I don't understand it. I mean, you've got one life to live. Good night! Don't live it watching a fool wiggle. Understand it. You say you're just not young. Yeah, I know. But it's not the difference in us is not age, it's IQ. The reason you like that garbage and I don't is not because I'm old and you're young, I'm smart and you're an idiot. By the way, that smartness has something to do with longevity too, in case you'd like to know it. Now I'm a little tired of kids making old people look like idiots. Well, you don't understand me. Well, you're not understandable. We could read you if you'd make the print bigger. You ain't got any business listening to rock music. Only one life to live. That idiot. You'd take a part of that time that God Almighty has given you, most precious commodity you have, the most precious medium of exchange known to mankind. Wasted. Filth. Indecency, immorality, liquor, dope, discos. There are too many things on sale, brother, that are good buys. Long as we live in this area where we have apartment buildings over here in Chicago, and these guys on the buses can take you to them, big apartment buildings with hundreds and hundreds of apartments, and some of those apartment houses, you can't find one father for each 100 housing units. That's the truth. I mean, that means that 99% in some of these housing areas, developments, 99% of those kids don't have a daddy, or don't know who their daddy is, or don't know where their daddy is. I don't understand it. You spend your time having a big time and eat and drink and marry and whoopee, ha, ha, ha. Listen, you could be spending your time helping one of those kids. The days are evil. Sales on. God's blue plate special is on. We live in this area of Hiles Anderson College. I mean, there are young people out at college. Some of our folks, bless God, have gotten the idea that they're going to invest their time helping some of those poor couples having a tough time making it. I mean, you got little gals at Hiles Anderson College. They came here, their husbands in Hiles Anderson College, little wives at home with one, two, or three, or four kids, and the husband goes to school at 7 o'clock in the morning, gets home at 1:30, goes to work at 2:30, works much of the night, comes in the middle of the night and gets 4 or 5 hours sleep, and then goes back to school at 7 o'clock in the morning, and the little wife hardly gets to see him, and hardly gets to see the little children, hardly get to see him, and there she sits, and she hadn't got enough money to buy herself a $9.95 blouse. Brother, it just looks like to me that there'd be a wonderful place for you to invest some of this time that God has given you. Days are evil. Area's evil. Hearts are broken. Lives are blighted. Sin runs rampant. Little lady just came here from Germany. I talked to her last night. Her husband was killed in Germany. And she said, of all the places in the whole world, I'd like to rear my children
It's in Hammond, Indiana. All the places in the whole world. She came here with her children. Didn't know much of anybody, if anybody. So happens that one of our finest families sort of adopted her a little bit. One of our fine families let her live with them for a while. Sort of became a elder brother and sister to her. Oh, I don't know what you did while they were doing that, but they sure got the bargain. And a lot of you folks sure got cheated out watching that television at night. They got the bargain. I can't comprehend any Christian. I just can't understand any Christian with just one life to live spending any of it on Love Boat. I don't understand that. I don't understand it. I just can't comprehend. And you know, let me just say this too. I won't say it whether you let me or not, but let me say this too. There are far too many of you folks in this room watching your television movies. I have people tell me just like it was nothing to it. And we're home watching a movie. Well, pray tell me what's the difference in watching a movie at home and one down here at the movie house. One thing, they got more guts than you have. They'll do it in public. Well, you say, what's wrong? Listen! There's nothing wrong with a guy taking $10,000 or $20,000 and buying a 1979 Ford Pinto. But it's stupid. Does anybody think it's a sin to spend $20,000 for a 79 Ford Pinto? Is that a sin? No! It's dumb! Not using them. You only got so much money. Use it wisely, stupid. There are a lot of things not wrong to do or sinful to do that are dumb to do. You only have so much money. Don't spend $20,000 on a 79 Ford Pinto. Don't spend 79 cents on a Ford at all. I just preach it what the book says. But it's dumb. And there are a lot of things that are not wrong to do that are stupid investments. What a time to shop. There's a sale on. I don't have enough time left to use it on criticism. If you want to sit around criticize other people, you just do it. But brother, I want to invest my time on something that's more valuable than that. I don't understand. I can't comprehend this. To save my life, I just can't comprehend why anybody wants to take a little of the most precious commodity that God Almighty has given him as a medium of exchange and spend any of it running somebody down. I understand that. What a bad buy. You took something of your most valuable thing you possess, your time. You say it's not so valuable. You wait till you don't have but about 30 seconds of it left and you're fighting to get just another breath of air. And you're fighting to get one more second? I don't know about you, but I haven't got time to spend. I don't want to take any of my time and spend it on being critical. On hatred, vindication, hurt feelings, sin, indecency, immorality, movies, discos, rock music. I'm not going to take any of my time. Not only am I not going to criticize to you, I'm not going to take my time and invest it on listening to you gossip either. No way I'm going to do it. Brother, with 80% of my life gone, if I have 70 years, my time's pretty precious to me. That's one reason why I don't do a lot of things. I mean, there's no place that anybody could send me on a trip where I'd go. No place. I want to go anywhere. Nowhere. And brother, if somebody gave me a free trip to name it, Mars. How are ye? Fine. How are you? I mean, anywhere. Name it. Not me, buddy. Not me. No, sir. Now, I'm not against going on a trip at all. I just believe a lot of you go on too many of them. I'm not against having fun, but a lot of you have too much of it. I'm not against going to ball games, but a heap of you go to too many of them. I'm not against, listen, music, but a lot of you are listening too much of it.
I'm not against picnicking and bowling and golfing, but many of you are doing too much of it. Why? Because the most precious, God said, the most precious thing you have in the world is your time.
And he said, when the days are evil, they show some goodbyes. Looking at it this way, it ceases to be a matter of right and wrong, but best buys. The world squanders its medium of exchange called time in buying wrong. Most Christians do spend their time on bad buys of buying good. I used to sit as a little boy on the day after Christmas out in a little shack of a worn out little hovel with the warmth of a wood stove and the light of a kerosene lamp. And I used to sit there on the day after Christmas, my little stomach full of turkey or chicken and dressing, English peas and cranberry sauce and pecan pie and pumpkin pie. Full, I used to sit there on the day after Christmas and this thought hit me. It's going to be a long time to Thanksgiving. And I can recall wondering why the church just brought us food on Thanksgiving and Christmas. Every Thanksgiving they bring us meal. Every Christmas. But brother, it's a long time between Christmas and Thanksgiving. And I can recall when I was a little boy, I used to say my prayer and I'd say, Dear God, if I ever pastored a church, we wouldn't just feed folks twice, 2 days a year. We'd have food for folks 365 days a year. And I've been a pastor now all these years. I got a motto. Nobody has to go to bed hungry in any town where I've pastored all these years. Nobody has to go to bed hungry. I remember when my daddy went to church one night with me. Only time he ever went, and you've heard the story many times. We got back home that night, Mom and Daddy and Earlene were in bed, and I was 7 years old, but still slept in my baby bed because that's all we had. And I remember kneeling beside the baby bed that night after my pastor. My daddy had gone to hear my pastor. only time he ever went to church with us. And my pastor didn't preach that night, but they had a choir cantata, and I cried all the way through it. My daddy slept all the way through it. And I remember kneeling beside the little bed, and I said, Dear God, if I ever were a preacher, I'd never do that. I had some very serious thoughts, even as a seven-year-old boy. Well, I've been a preacher now 39 years and a pastor for 37 years. Every Sunday morning, every Sunday night, we've had preaching. And every Wednesday night, we've taught the Word of God or had preaching. I remember one night at the age of 17, my mom and I just didn't see how we could make it. I mean, she'd work in the fall and spring, and winter and spring, and I'd go to school and I'd work in the summer and sort of keep ends met. I remember one night we just sat down and mama just, she just despaired. She just absolutely said, Son, I don't know where we're going to get enough money to buy food and clothes and pay the rent. Now, I remember that night I walked way into the night around the block, went down Idaho till I got to Hobson. I went east on Hobson till I got to Ewing, and north on Ewing till I got to Elmore, and then west on Elmore till I got to Idaho, and then around that block. I walked all night. And I got to thinking, life's pretty short. And looks like a person ought to be careful how he spends his time. And I got to thinking, Dear God, if you'd ever give me some money, I'd share it. Now, I don't have a lot of money, but I'll guarantee you what comes through these fingers I share, that's a God's truth if I ever told it in my life. You say, why? Because I only have one life to live. So much time, that's all I've got. I surely want to get goodbyes with it. I take my spiritual billfold out and I say, Dear God, I look in here and find there's so much to buy. All I got left. 4,445 days. Don't let me make a bad purchase. All they got left is 732 weeks. You understand? We had our 13th youth conference last week. You understand if we have 13 more, I'll be 71. You understand we've had 21 pastor schools. If we have 21 more, I'll be almost 80. I don't know what you're going to do with your life. But brother, I'm not going to squander my time. I'm not going to do it. You say, well, boy, thank God, I got a lot more time than that. You don't know you've got more time than that. You don't know. You might be in a McDonald's and some nut might come and send you right on out. I'm not eating at McDonald's anymore. I've had my last Big Mac. I mean, boy, a Big Mac came in there and he messed everything up. I've had my last chicken McNuggets. You don't know. Life's evening sun is sinking low. A few more days and I must go to meet the deeds that I've done. Will there be no sinking sun? My life on earth is just a span, and so I'll try to do the best I can. While going down last dreary road, I'll try to lift some traveler's load. I'll try to change the night to day, make flowers bloom along the way, along the way. I just don't understand it, folks. Why we don't be more careful how we spend the most precious thing we have. Boy, money is everybody talking money. I bought you money. Boy, you work hard for it. You work hard for it. Watch it. Time's 10 times more important than your money. Your money will still be in the bank when your time's all gone. It's going to last longer than your time. One night, I walked around the block with a friend of mine. I was about 16 years old. His name was Bob Keys. We were in high school together. Played on the same city championship softball team. I pitched. He played third base. Had paper routes. Idaho and Maryland Street were right beside each other. His paper route was right down Maryland. Mine was right down Idaho. Lived 2 blocks from each other. Both of us lived about a block and a half, 2 blocks from Joe Boyd. One night, Bob came over. We took a walk up to Darty's Pharmacy and got us a nickel malted milk, real thick malted milk. We came back and sat on a curb that night. And I said, Bob, you understand next year we'll be seniors in high school? He said, that's right, Jack. I said, Bob, you and I used to play in the same ball league when you were 9, I was 9. Boy, I said, it sure has happened. I remember we used to think, boy, to be a senior in high school, boy, that's forever away. I said, Bob, next year we'll be seniors. He said, that's right. I said, Bob, you know what? Life's that way. I said, one of these days we'll be there, Bob, when it's over. And I said, it seemed like a long time now, but it seemed like a long time. We're 9 years old before senior year came too. Well, one night I got a call. My friend Bob Keys had a massive heart attack several years ago. Then he had an aneurysm on his heart. They thought he wouldn't ever live. He did live, but he was only a shadow of himself. And I went down and he picked out a brand new 88 Oldsmobile. And I said, Bob, I'll make the payments on it. And he had no money. I sent him money regularly. He had no car, and I bought him a car. And then one day I was preaching down in Richardson, Texas, same church where Terry Smith pastors now. Another fellow was there then. They said, your friend Bob Keys is near death. I got in the car and drove over on a Tuesday afternoon, Veterans Hospital, where I used to throw the paper out. I was a little boy, 10 years old, through the Dallas Morning News route, and the Veterans Hospital was built. Walked up in there, laid my friend, Bob Keys, at the point of death. And I said, Bob, remember? Years ago, you and I sat on the curb one night, coming back from Darty's Pharmacy. We talked about how we're almost seniors now, and how we thought it'd never come. I said, Bob, remember how we talked that night about life is that way and death is that way? And Bob said, yes, I do, Jack. And I said, Bob, they say you can't live much longer. I couldn't speak anymore. He was sort of a little nutty guy anyway, sort of like I am now. I leaned over and I said, Bob, I want to do something I've never done before, and you may not like it. But I'm going to do it. And I kissed him on the brow. And he went, "Ick." And I cried and he cried. I turned and walked away. And just a while, he was gone. I thought 1,000 times about that night we sat on the curb and talked about death. One day, the phone rang in Garland, Texas. And I picked it up. The secretary said, long-distance call from Corpus Christi. And I said, "Hello." And the voice said, "Brother Jack, this Brother Lester." I said, "Brother Jack," we're both young preachers at the time. He said, "Brother Jack, would you come down to Corpus Christi and give me a couple of nights? I think my church needs you. We're having a little problem." And I flew to Corpus Christi and gave Brother Roloff 2 nights. On Monday night, a young preacher still in his 20s sat with another young preacher a bit older on a curb outside the Methodist church that Brother Roloff had rented to start a church in. He sat on a curb. He had about 300 in Sunday school and I had about 500. And a couple of young preachers sat on the curb. We got to talking about life. So many broken hearts. So many lives that are ruined and blighted. So many needs. I don't know about you. I'm going to shop.